So I want to welcome all of you here to our first meeting at the Center for Spiritual Living. It's a new facility, and we want to treat it with the respect that it deserves. It's a welcoming place. I feel the spiritual quality and the ambiance of the whole facility, and it's nice to be here rather than into the this kind of the gymnasium that we were working out of there for several weeks. So, now, when Joseph was here, he said, "Rodney, I want to give you a hint. Don't sit on the stage when you're presenting, because it feels too distant, too formal." And I went up there to see how it does feel, and it does feel very distant. So I'm going to be down here. It does compromise your ability perhaps to see me, but I'm hoping that we can work that out. I feel more connected to you on the floor here rather than sort of in the lofty position of being on stage. So we're starting a new series, and it fits very comfortably in the first week of this year. Because the topic, which we usually try to encourage during the first meeting of the year, has something to do with ethics or perceptual behavior or refuges and all of that, because we're going to be taking them this evening. We want to promote that in the Dharma talk. And so the theme for much of this year, if not all this year, will be birthing the heart. And the particular topic under birthing the heart that I'll be speaking about tonight is integrity. So you can see that the word integrity also encompasses much of the ethics that we were usually talking about during these sessions early on, the first of the year. But I just want to put this in perspective to last year's series on dependent origination, because I want us to get a sense that I'm building. I'm pointing to something, that the teaching isn't just what's the next convenient talk to speak about, but rather that it builds on an overlay, a foundation that was presented last year in dependent origination. And that series really showed over time how we, the sense of us, is constructed. And through the sense of the construction of me, we also construct the world from what we have remembered it to be, from a past association with it. And dependent origination gave us a whole sequence of links that showed how this builds upon itself to form the perceptual idea of ourselves in the world that most of us have as we sit here tonight. When we look out from our eyes, we see the world in a particular way. We see you there and me here, or things of the world being separate from other things. So it feels very piecemeal, very separate, very scattered. Like they don't seem to relate to each other. They don't seem to be connected. They don't seem to have any relationship. And so the sequence of last year's dependent origination shows how that perception is formed and was formed and is continuing to be formed over time, so that it sort of blocks out the true perception of interconnectedness, of how things are connected. And because we put so much weight into things being isolated, distant, and different from one another, we form that sense of isolation that we have from things through the need to have things be distant from us so that we can then grasp and want them continually. So the world of wanting, the world of things, is formed through the world of wanting. And that is something that we do in an active way, and that's what keeps our perceptions fixed in the way that we normally perceive. But the way we normally perceive is not necessarily the truth. And not only is it not necessarily the truth, it just simply isn't the truth. fundamentally. So, but it hides the truth because this coverings of our perception, our wanting, covers the normal and natural way that life is related to itself. So, you say, okay, so how can I get to the true nature of things? Well, one of the ways that dependent origination showed that is to stop being ignorant of the way the world is manifesting so that we can begin to see the very way that we're causing the world to shift its perception of unity into separation. And last year's 20 talks, or whatever, however many there were, really lays out how we can do that actively. But there's a second thing we have to do. And that is, we have to birth the heart. Okay, because what lies behind the perception of separation and distance and isolation is that, is the heart's unity. And most of us don't have any way to know how to access that. It's like we constantly use the world of things to try to accomplish or to see unity through the world of things. And you can't see unity through the world of things because you're constantly asserting the sense of individual shapes and objects in the world of separation that hides the sense of unity. So the first thing we have to do is to sort of encourage or birth the heart forward. Encourage it forward so that inclining the mind towards seeing differently. If we want to, or we can stay the way we are, the problem with the world of things is that things rub up against each other, and that causes the friction and conflict and struggle that creates and tones and defines our life. So if we're finished with that, or we feel that we want to move on from that kind of tension, then we have to want to see the world of unity. So there's an inclination that's first and foremost. Well, I want to see what the world's like from a different perspective. And when we ask the world to show up in its true form, we'll notice how much we try to keep it in the old way, how much we fight seeing it in the new way. So just the inclining our mind towards seeing it anew and fresh will show us the way we hold it in the old shapes and forms and objects and individuation that we have known it to be. It'll confront us on those matters. So what we have to do, there's some preparation that's necessary if we're going to incline our mind towards unity, and there are different ways that we have to work our lives to encourage that unification forward. And that's the first talk in the series about how to do that is tonight, and it's on integrity. So there's a way that we have to show up in the world that's willing to see the world differently, right? And if you look at all of the different spiritual traditions, most of them have some basis of ethics within them. I mean, I can't think of a single religion that doesn't have some basis of ethics. So why is that, you see? Why is ethical conduct so important to spiritual development? Because at the heart of spiritual development is the word integrity. Integrity means wholeness. One of its definitions, completion. It's derived from the word integer, which is whole number. So integrity is the movement of our lives, aligning our lives towards that sense of unification or wholeness of being. It's a beautiful word, really. But it requires, something from us. It's not a passive word. It's not, yeah, that sounds nice. I'll take some notes tonight, and I'll go back and do whatever I want to. It's a very, it stirs something in us when we hear the word integrity. And it's not often good what it stirs, because it stirs, oh my God, you know, I don't want to give up that. It shows us where we aren't fully aligned with that word, doesn't it? I mean, just let the word sit in your consciousness for a minute and see what comes up in terms of what behaviors or actions of body, speech, and mind are in disagreement or in conflict with that word. See, the beauty of a word like that is it shows us where we're not. And so, okay, just let the word integrity sit with you, and you begin to become uneasy with that word. In some ways, most of you in this room are moving your life in accordance with integrity, which is beautiful. Most of you are not thieves. And so the adjustment that's needed isn't it's not criminal adjustment. It's, you know, it's the sense that we are in discord in many of our interactions with each other, to life, within ourselves. And that discord is just doesn't allow a wholeness or a spirit of completion within us. So it calls us towards self-examination. And that's actually a very beautiful investigation. But we have to be very careful with this word, because one of the ways that the perception of isolation and distance and separation works is that when you create a word like integrity or truth or honesty or any word that has an end of the continuum idea to it, it sets us up in struggle with that word, because we're never integritous enough, we're never honest enough, we're never whatever it is enough. And we always find ourselves belittling where we are in relationship to that word, because we haven't lived up to the ideal that the word intones. Okay, so the first thing we have to do is throw away the perfectionism here. This is practical, this is obtainable, this is doable. But it's doable within a range. Because we are human beings, we're fallible. And it means that we have to disengage the process of examination from the idealism that the word's creating to the practicality with it, which is in reach. And the practicality of the word is really how the word is associated with the pain of not doing it correctly. So, in other words, when I find myself gossiping or whatever it might be that feels a little less than integritous, I feel it in myself. It doesn't feel good. It feels like I'm casting myself out somehow, away from, falling down. For me, it's a sense of almost being dragged down into some kind of spiraling. It's energetically, it feels very discordant. And it's that I'm paying attention to. I'm not paying attention to how wrong my speech is and that I better get it right because I'm a teacher in the Dharma and here I'm not doing, you know, I don't go that direction. I go with the energy of the system. If I know unification, if I know that interconnection is at the heart of reality, which all of you have a sense towards. I'm not putting this too far away from anyone in the room. All of us have a sense that we are more connected than we know the world to be. All of us have that sense. That's why we're here. And if we allow ourselves to move in accordance with that sense, so that energetically our lives feel that sense of connection with each other, with ourselves, within the actions we take, what we find is that there's a kind of harmony or ease within relating from that place. As soon as we break that place off or we violate it through any number of ways that we can start isolating or individuating life, we find that the energy breaks away from that. It feels uncomfortable. And you get so, we get so, that we really don't want to spend our time fracturing things. It doesn't feel good in us, and it's not the truth of what we know life to be. So it's not a morality in the sense of I should do this. It's the sense of this doesn't feel right. And it comes, and that comes from wisdom. That's a statement of wisdom. And so the correction that's necessary is to get back on course through wisdom. And so many times in conversations, you know, either I won't be listening or I'll be not fully there, or those are breaks in the sense of connectedness, or I'll say something that's just a little bit off because I don't want to elaborate on what really happened. I'll kind of say it in a very quick and slightly off way, and that feeling of just that rub, I listen to that rub, and I hope you do as well. And that rub says, okay, wait a second here, back on track. It's no longer acceptable for it to be off track. But you have to want it. You see, you have to, this whole thing depends upon us wanting to birth the heart, to call the heart forward. Because it hurts too much to live a life of separation. You see, it backs us all the way up to dependent origination. It's like dependent origination ended in suffering, ended in birth, it ended in aging, and it ended in death. It ends in those three because of the way we picture ourselves within life. That's the fact of what life offers us when we view it from the distorted way we perceive it. So how is it that I can live in this world in accordance with the deepest truths I know? That should stir us a little. That's a call to action. It's not a call towards passivity. And the reason I'm emphasizing that so much tonight is because I find us, especially in this tradition, to be a little too passive in our engaged Buddhism. We take it in and we expect there to be some kind of a trickle-down effect from just taking it in, that somehow listening to the words is enough to move our lives in the direction of those words over time. Well, maybe a little, if insights arise with those words. But if you want to encourage the process forward, if you want to truly birth the heart, you have to move this into action, wise action. It can't stay simply as a good idea or an insight that I once had. It has to be an engaged system. And so most of what I'm going to be doing this year is to give you tips on how to engage many of the insights you've already had and to further those insights so that they become central to the way you want to live, not to the way that you occasionally live, but the mainstream way you want to live. And in doing so, we have to, again, it is dependent upon our inclination to want to move this thing forward. As I get older, and I hope it's true for you too, because we're all getting older, there's more of an urgency. You know, so at what age will this thing start working for me? At what age? I've seen people on their deathbed asking that question. I would suggest not waiting quite so long. Now, the interesting thing about this word integrity, the first thing we have to do is to live it in human form. You see, many of us feel the tensions of being a human being, and we just like to get to the impersonal. Like, have an impersonal mind, yes, emotions and thoughts, and they're all just coming, you know, like, sort of like streamers. And, you know, we're sitting there in some way that untouched by all of that. No. No. In human form. Through the personal, we come to the impersonal. We don't bypass the personal to get to the impersonal. We have to invite this word integrity in the midst of our personal life. We can't wait until our mind has reached a kind of equanimity that we are so remote and distant that we now think that integrity will become a natural way that we see and therefore a natural action that we undertake. It has to start here with whatever level of understanding we have. Right? Like, when I used to teach precepts, I would say, okay, so after a while, they won't be moral statements, and you'll see the view of unity, and then the precepts will hold themselves within that view, and you don't have to worry about it. No. Take them on wherever our understanding is. But do so with the fact that if when I create or when I step out of the integritous pattern, the integritous truth, there's going to be friction inside of me. So let the friction, the struggle, the conflict of stepping away from honesty, stepping away from integrity, show us that we have to change or let go or release what we have just been doing in order to regain a foothold back into this sense of composure and harmony. Don't take it on as a morality. And that's where we get lost. We are so used to self-judgment. And I think it's a product of when we think about ourselves as a thing, like you think about all things in the world as things, you have ideas about the things of the world as well as ideas about yourself as a thing. And with ideas come evaluation and comparison with other things, because you're not quite as good as that other thing sitting next to you on the left. And therefore, when we give ourselves a spiritual adventure like the one we're on, we fill it full of evaluative judgments about how we're not living up to the ideas we think we should be striving for in order to obtain the goals that we think spirituality moves us towards. That's why the word integrity is so important. Because it is not stationary. It's not a goal in itself. It's a movement towards wholeness, towards completion. And evaluation and judgment are static. They say, I'm this way and I want to be that way, but I've got to do all this to get there. It thinks of itself as a place, as a point on a continuum, and then tries to move, often with a lot of agony, towards another place on that continuum. It thinks of itself in that way, and because it's still on the continuum, it's constantly judging its particular reference point. Okay, so that doesn't work. But if you use the word wholeness, now you're birthing the heart. Okay, and this doesn't matter. This doesn't matter where you are on your understanding, on the continuum of your understanding. This is very important because you don't have to wait for a certain insight in order to undertake or push or move yourself in this direction. It's to challenge yourself from the sense that life is more connected than it appears through my eyes or through my thinking. And so when we take the word wholeness, we take that truth of interconnection and we say, okay, so what's missing in this moment? Not I have to move from this moment to some other moment in order to be better, but what is going on in this moment that has me distorting the truth? What's going on? I want to know that. What is it that I'm... what assumption is coming to bear in this moment that keeps me ill at ease? And if I'm willing to investigate and look at that, I see that there's some evaluation going on, some judgment of myself in relationship to the other, which, because I believe in that evaluation, I then lie. I then distort the truth. And then so I say, okay, so is that true? Is it true? Is it true that there's something wrong with me in this moment? That I need to evaluate myself with somebody else? I mean, what we do is we switch paradigms. We switch from the paradigm of dependent origination into the paradigm of the heart that confirms where we are, that confirms our place on earth. It doesn't create the bitter tension of not being where we want to be. It confirms our place here. And that's what the heart does. It always confirms where we are and what we're doing. There's no alternative. Evaluations come, or judgments come, from an alternative. I'm doing this and I wish I were doing that. Or I'm here and I have to better myself down the line somewhere. So we bring that sense of within our lives of, okay, let me just look here. What's going on? What am I believing in this moment that's creating that sense of tension? Well, I believe she's better than me. Okay, so you just stop with that. In Joseph's Sunday workshop, he talked about encouraging skillful states of mind and discouraging unskillful states of mind. This is what he was relating it to. This is what he was talking about. We've been down this track so many times of evaluating ourselves and judging ourselves or pitting ourselves against one another. It's never worked. It's created more and more tension in my life. I don't need to keep doing that. It's a dead end. And therefore, when I hear myself continuing that same theme, I simply go to the default position of being present and releasing the tension of needing to think in that way. That's not aversion. That's wisdom. Let me just feel this life as it's being lived. And what happens is that a new source of energy comes in through no longer understanding life in that discordant way. This new source of energy is a harmonic energy. It's a sense of calm, or a calm abiding that doesn't need performance within it. It's not a performance issue. It's not like I suddenly have to say something that acknowledges me as opposed to someone else, or I have to raise my head up a little more so that people notice me. That life itself that's lived in this moment is sufficient, that it doesn't need betterment. You see? And so you have to call yourself into that. You have to call it out. So you're in a conversation with someone, you find you're distorting something that you just said, you feel the discord in your body, and you recognize that if you keep going along that line, the discord is going to become more and more exaggerated and difficult, and you are wise enough to say, I'm not doing that. I'm going to release the need to have to do that. That brings you back. That affirms you. That doesn't confuse you. You'd think it would confuse you because now what am I going to do? No. In releasing the energy towards greater separation, you are now affirmed by the moment. You are now held within the presence of the moment. You know your place in life. If you kept going down that line of deceit, you would get lost in the darkness, the shrouding quality of deceit that just keeps going forever, you know, as you add more and more story onto that deceit. But when you say, no, that's it, I'm back here, in that beautiful humility of the moment, in which you may have to say, you know what, that wasn't true what I just said. Let's come back and re-engage here. The willingness to own ourselves, to allow ourselves to be in this present, to be here without pretension. I mean, that takes a lot of courage to be that humble, doesn't it? Right? But you see what truth requires from us? You see what it requires from us? This is what each of us have to do in order for our actions to be in alignment with that sense of connection that we all have within us. We have to live it. If you live the lie, you reinforce the perception of distance. If you live interconnection, you begin to love the sense of what interconnection does for you. You love the heart opening. You don't have to stay on top of yourself all the time, thinking what you're going to. It's not like there's some kind of overbearing super ego that has to look down on you and keep you corrected, whip yourself into shape. It's a relaxed presence. And that relaxed presence is the heart communicating from itself. See? The discord, that self-examination, that critique that's always there, that person who's always weighing in on everything that I'm saying and holding court over me, we're already off. We're already in the view of separation, in the view of unity, in the view of interconnection. It's at ease. We're at ease. There's no critique going on. Just sense it. And so we use this sense of wholeness. I gave homework, the homework back there between the Donna baskets, I gave two sets of homework. And I want you to pick the one that you are most, that you're most connected with. And at different times, you'll find one homework will call you forth, and at a different time, a different one will. But one of them is just to stop and say, and this too. In the middle of your disagreement and in your irritation, instead of stepping back and criticizing yourself, just open your heart to what you just did. And this too. It's not a whitewash to what you just did. It's an acceptance, an allowance, an examination of what just occurred. And this too. And when you bring it into the full expanse of your awareness, no longer is it something that is terribly troublesome, that you have to work the rest of your life to end. Once you take the charge out of its difficulty, it comes back into the fold. It's not really a problem anymore, although the pattern may continue. It's very easy to release it within the general influence of the heart. When it's mind-controlled, when it's a tension that bears upon your life as something that you shouldn't have within you, then you can be assured as you invest more and more energy in dissipating that, it will stay very much a part of your life. That's the paradox of separation. The harder you try to get rid of something, the more you can assure its continuance. Think about that. So if that doesn't work, what works? Well, maybe wholeness works, and this too. Maybe in this too works. You see, relaxing with something affirms the love, right? We're not trying to... When you try to fix something in yourself, that's the lack of love for it. You don't have love for it, do you? You wouldn't be trying to fix it if you had love for it. You wouldn't try to get over something if you loved it. And as the heart opens, it's no longer in a fixing mode. It's in an exploration and a learning mode, which is what the poem was meant to convey. It's in an understanding and an introspective mode, a learning and a wisdom that comes from that learning. But it's not about dissociating or distancing or placing something outside of myself that I have to force. That's not unity. Unity is unity. Unity is inclusivity. Unity is wholeness of heart. And so when you begin to get a sense of where our struggles are coming from, they're often coming from the need to try to fix ourselves, that there's something wrong that needs attention so that I can be better once I have forced my way through this problem I have. So maybe it's your anger. Well, what if we just, in this too, our anger? So there was no tension associated with it. This too, the inclusivity of it, no longer strengthens the thoughts we have of rebellion or fight or antagonism. Those thoughts are also released within this too. This too, just this. Now I'm back. Everything is here. I'm not even struggling with that. And so the fight goes out of that, right? The fight was invested in that because of the struggle I had with that. Once the struggle comes out of that, so does the fight come out of that. What we begin to see is that the whole is much more than the view from the parts. When I'm looking from my anger, that creates a view in itself that's very distant and different from the view of wholeness, of unity, of inclusivity. And we also learn that the whole is much more than the sum of the parts. It's a different paradigm entirely. That's what's so beautiful about this thing, is that you don't stay embittered and you're just trying to include it. Once you truly include it, you're no longer embittered. The whole changes the very perceptual way we see. There is a different way to perceive. That's what dependent origination taught us. The view of me here is a mistake in identity. It's a mistake in perception. And as we start including more and more, we start feeling ourselves becoming less and less. because the way we're formed was within the tension I created through my observations. I don't like her, I like her, I don't like me. Once the whole is included, so that nothing exists outside of that observation, everything rests very gently as itself in harmony. So now we understand what taking refuge is. We take refuge in the whole. We take refuge in completion. And where is completion? It's as close as the in-breath. Feel it. Of course. Of course it would be that way. Of course refuge wouldn't be some distant thing. Of course it would be accessible immediately. You see how close it is? You see how close refuge is? What is incomplete in this moment? What needs to change in this moment? Seriously, what needs to change? What do I need to get rid of in this moment? Therein lies our struggle. What's wrong with me? I used to go around with that assumption that there's something wrong with me. Everybody I met, I would try to keep them from seeing what I thought was wrong with me. And that would change depending upon who I met. So you can imagine what a mess that gives you, which I completely admit to. But what if there was nothing wrong with you? And then you had an interaction. What would that look like, you see? Sense it for a moment. We're bringing this very close. When we birth the heart, we're bringing the summit of our spiritual quest very close now. Very close. We're no longer keeping it distant and far away. We're inclining ourselves towards something that's very close at hand. If you want to make it far away, you can. You will just have to keep recreating dependent origination moment after moment to keep it far away. That's what it does. Me, separate and distant from that. But we spent a year looking at that topic. And we saw that it wasn't true. There isn't a single link that can sustain itself without your ignorance or our unwillingness to look at it. When we look at it, there's nothing there. You know, there's a prominent theory in physics now. I haven't read it yet, so I'm very it's just been in passing, I've heard that what we really are is a hologram. So I'll give you more as I that somehow some information around a black hole is being shown. I don't really understand. No, I don't know. I'm not even going there. But the point is that what we see in the world and that which is seeing the world is holographic. This is reputable physics. Okay? That actually has a point to it. Because if I look at myself, I don't see much. When I really look there, there's nothing there. It just keeps moving in terms of transparency. Now, what is that? Why does it look three-dimensional, except when you actually look at it, it's not three-dimensional? What do you call that? Well, I call it a hologram. So I don't know whether the physics is right on this, but it certainly fits in parallel to what we're practicing here. The point is, why continue to make ourselves three-dimensional when there's no proof to that fact whatsoever? Not in substance. And we spend a year looking at how that was falsified, how we falsify that perception of thingness. So, if we're ready now, we can start piercing that. But to do that, we have to keep it very close at hand, not distant. As soon as you make it distant, as I just mentioned, you're back to the old paradigm of separation. I've got things to do. This is what I've got to do to complete my spiritual path. That thinking is itself the fulfillment of dependent origination. Because that's the way it thinks. That's the strategy. That's the way it looks at the world. So we can't do that anymore. We spent a year. It's got to be close. So let's make it close this year, shall we? Let's just sit for a minute or two. Silence makes it close. See, we talk ourselves into distance. That's what we learned last year. And if we're willing to release that into stillness, things can't be kept away from us. The world comes in harmony, not in discord. Let the world come in this moment. Okay.